Talbot Bieber, real one.
You were describing the burning of the synagogues in the square and how your house was spared. Can you pick up from there?
They were rounding up all the men from all the neighboring houses with their arms up. They had to stand around the burning synagogues. We happened to live opposite, and we were in the house, but like mice hiding wherever we could, and just occasionally peep out from behind the curtains to see what is happening. It was burning all night, and in the morning, women got out from the houses begging the officers, the Gestapo in charge, to let them try to get the fires out. But it spread in a whole street opposite. All the houses were burning for a week. They would not allow nobody to get anywhere near. So that was the beginning. We were terrified. And the next day, the Polish collaborators used to go round with the Gestapo, break into shops, loot, and show them where wealthy Jews live to rob. Of course, life was never the same. We tried to make the best of every day, and every day were new rules and regulations. First, every Jew coming out into the street had to wear the Star of David on the arm. Then shopping, we only could go out for about 12 o'clock when everything sold out. Everything, food one could only get in a market. Vegetables or fruit, but by 12 o'clock everything was sold out. So the only way we could get food is if the peasants that knew my parents wanted something from the store, that was only if we could exchange goods from the store for food. To go out in the street, everybody was terrified because they were picking up people to carry out all sorts of dirty jobs. Sometimes they would get into offices where there were lawyers and even a judge to make them sweep the street. Or Orthodox people like my father with a beard wouldn't go out in the street, so my late father every morning was taken to an outside coal bunker and sit there during the day, and my mother only used to bring him back for the night because they could be picked up for either work or cut off his beard in the street where the Poles used to stand around and make fun. Or also they picked up young men and took them away to concentration camps that they were never seen again. So my oldest brother, by that time, the Russians occupied part of Poland, and all the young people were escaping to the Russian side, not to...
I think I might start off by asking you if your family ever talked about trying to get away. You were talking about young people trying to get to the...
Well, only my oldest brother got away to...
Just, you can start telling me when we start filming. Okay. Did your family have any thoughts or discussions about trying to escape or get away from the Germans?
There was no way of escaping. Nowhere to go. Only that my older brother, he was at the time in conscription age, and being very orthodox, he would try to escape that. So war broke out, and as we heard that the Germans are rounding up young people and putting them in concentration camps, so my older brother escaped to the Russian border. Time went on, and the rest of the children, we were all too young, and for the family to leave, it was it wasn't possible, nowhere, because as the German front was progressing, they not only marched into Poland and to all the neighboring countries, so there was no way to escape. And also we were hoping every day that something will happen, war will come to an end. Nobody imagined at the time that it will last 6 years. So the Germans settled in. They confiscated most of the possessions. Every day was a new rule. Gold, silver, all valuables have to be given up, they confiscated, and also then they make demands of money. In all the time, if we want also a Jewish community center was organized, and all the demands they gave to this Jewish community center, and if they wouldn't deliver, we were threatened all the time with deportation. So time went on, and we tried to make the best of every day. Business as such was absolutely finished because there was no deliveries. So whatever there was, we could only exchange for food. So really, life, there was no schools for Jewish children, only if private, there was a teacher and she would give a lesson to smaller children. But other than that, there was no school either. So, in fear, every day, the evenings, we sit in the dark. We were afraid to switch on a light in case the Germans will know that we are in. Only even to listen when it was quiet to their footsteps in the street, it was absolutely terrifying.
As a very religious family, did your parents ever try to explain to you or talk to you about the terrible atrocities that you were witnessing?
Well, what could they explain? We saw it ourselves, and also hearing what is happening in other places all the time, we could see what is happening. People were running from place to place. When they were forming the ghetto in Krakow, the people came to us. And then people were running from place to place, hoping wherever they go, they will be saved. But we didn't realize that will go on and on. We were also hoping that maybe soon something will happen and or an end.
Can you describe your family move into the ghetto?
Well, we carried on under those terrible conditions till about March, the 9th of March, 1942. We were threatened all the time with deportation, but that particular morning, my late mother happened to go out on the balcony early morning, and she saw that something is going to happen because the town center was full of Gestapo. And there she, as we were threatening all the time with deportation, she came back and said, quick, get dressed, children, something is happening. So about a little later, a knock in the door, they could break in at any time if they wanted the Gestapo, and gave us 10 minutes to get out, and herded us all into the town center. Some people that couldn't move so quick, older people, were shot on the spot. And there we stood in the town center in rows of five for hours, till they went into every house and checked that everybody's out. With us was my grandmother and the aunt with four children, and we were five girls and my younger brother. And my brother was taken away, segregated right away. And we waited and we waited. But in Poland, in March, there was still very cold and snow, heavy snow. So there we waited until they checked, and they gave us order to march. And we marched to a hangar where the aeroplanes were kept. So in the snow, people couldn't walk. Whoever fell or tripped was shot on the spot. Till we got to this hangar, and it was outside the town in a forest. When we got there, there was just bare concrete, wet from the snow, and they got us in. So we just had to sit on the concrete, whoever had a little bundle that managed to take with you or a little bag, we sat on it. No water, no food, cold. So we all sat down or lie down if there was a space. And every day there were segregations. We had to get up, go out, and they would segregate people, and we heard shooting all the time in the woods. They kept us like that, with no food, no heating, with nothing, no water, for 5 days, until we were taken to a train where there were cattle wagons waiting for us, and we were taken away to Lublin, a completely part, a different part of Poland. And there we were taken from the station with a horse and cart to a little place, it was called Dubienko, where we were distributed, a whole family, into one room. And we were at the time about 14 people, and we were given a small room where there was a shop before, a shop premises. And there was not a chair, not a bed, there was nothing, but there were shelves. So my late father managed to dismantle the shelves and with the boards to make banks so that we could at least lie down or sit down. But Mielec, the town where I come from, was the first town to be made Judenfrei, which means free of Jews, because of those aeroplane factories. So my late parents figured that around our town we had still a family living. So if my sister and I could go back and arrange for my rest of the family to come back where to live with my aunt, a sister of my late mother. So they managed to arrange for us forged documents that we are not Jewish. And with that, my sister and I set off traveling back to neighboring town where we came from. By the time we got there, joined my late aunt and her family, about 2 weeks later, we received a card from a younger sister. "Don't write to us anymore. We are being deported and we don't know where." And that was the end that we heard the last time from my parents, my sisters, and the rest of the family.
So what happened to you and your sister after that?
But 1942, they started the final solution. So wherever we went, we stayed with my aunt for about 2 or 3 weeks, and they were deporting this little town. And every day, wherever we ran from place to place, today it was this town, tomorrow another town, and in the end, there was nowhere to run. We did go back to the town where I come from, to Mielec, to Polish people where my parents entrusted valuables and all sorts of important things, but they were afraid, and if they saw us, "Oh no, we can't keep you, you must run." So in the end, having those forged documents, we had no other way. We thought about the Kraków ghetto. So we knew a Polish family that my late parents used to do business with, and these people owned a shoe factory. So when we got there, this firm, the owner, was very helpful to us. He employed 5 people from the Kraków ghetto. It wasn't easy to get into the Kraków ghetto either. So he managed that these 5 people that came to work to him every day to the shoe factory helped us to get into the Kraków ghetto. But life in the Kraków ghetto wasn't easy either. The people lived in very cramped rooms. So one of those men that used to come to work to this shoe factory helped us to live with him. And there was 2-3 families in the ghetto living in one room. Food was very difficult, it was rationed, but by that time they also arranged workshops in Kraków ghetto. So with the influence of this shoe factory, we managed to get to work into these shoe workshops in the ghetto.
Did you find other people that you knew in the ghetto that could support you in some way spiritually?
Well, we supported each other. There was no other way. We all lived in fear. We only listened from minute to minute what is happening, and any new orders or what is going to happen next. So that didn't last long, and they were liquidating the Krakow ghetto. So with the liquidation of the Krakow ghetto, we got into Plaszów.
Can I just stop you there and go back to the ghetto? How long were you in the ghetto?
Not very long, about a few months.
Yes. Could you describe it a little bit, what it was like on the streets? Did you witness shootings on the streets?
Not in the streets, not in Krakow ghetto.
Tell me a little bit more about the work that you and your sister were doing in the ghetto.
We were working in this shoe factory, producing shoes with leather uppers and wooden soles. But what can I say? We lived all the time in fear and always listening and rumors what is going to happen, because we knew that it can't last.
So tell us about the liquidation of the ghetto. What happened then?
Well, this one morning, orders, get out, and whatever. By then we only had a few bits belongings. We grabbed the belongings and lined up to march to Plaszów. Plaszów is outskirts of Krakow, and Plaszów, children were not allowed, older people were not allowed, and they were shot on the spot. But some people took a chance and smuggled in some children in a bag, in a rucksack, whatever way they could. Plaszów was a Jewish cemetery. When we got to Plaszów, as we arrived through the gates, and it wasn't even ready, it was no huts even built for us, we saw already three men hanging. Frightened, I just don't know. When I think back, we must have been completely already numb, without no feeling. We just obeyed and did what we had to do. So we had to start help build the huts. The beginning was dismantling the graves, and with the headstones we laid a path to walk on. It was also a very hilly area, so every morning, still dark, the appel. We all had to march and line up on the appel. There we stood, cold, winter. We stood for hours on end till we were checked. And then a march off for work. Carry bricks, carry timber, it was called Barackenbau, building the barracks. And every day were new people coming in, and we had to do a norm every day. And if the Lager Commandant Gett wasn't satisfied with the work that we carried out, he used to go absolutely berserk. One day, in the afternoon, they called an appel, and we thought this is something out of the routine. So there we march again to the place. It was usually a vast, empty place, and with watchtowers surrounded the camp. We were always watched every move. There also was curfew. You could, after a certain time, soon as it was getting darker, we couldn't go out from the barracks. There were latrines, or the water was shut off, and we could only have some water at a certain time. So this day, we marched to the Appellplatz, and there he really went mad, the Lagerkommandant. And when we got to the Appell, we standing there in rows of five, we see big tables and soldiers with truncheon standing around. And this Lagerkommandant Gett was going around and only turn his head and point with his truncheon. They picked up certain people and marched them onto those tables. And they were given 25 lashes. And we stood there like absolutely numb. When I think about it, I still can't believe it that happened.
Could you describe Gert? What did he look like and what effect did he have on people?
Absolute frightening, terrifying. He was the biggest man I've ever seen in my life. Tall, a giant, with two dogs like lions. And also, if he only moved his head or an eyelash, these dogs jumped and tore a person to pieces. It was so frightening.
Did you personally come into contact with him at all?
Yes, also afterwards, when the camp was more organized and they set up workshops in Plaszów, and there, because I worked in the ghetto in this workshop, I could work in Plaszów. I was allocated to this shoe workshop, and there we worked shifts day and night. So sometimes at night, when we were also the food was, we were always starving, hungry, tired at night shifts. Sometimes some people were falling asleep. But the rumor was passed on, Gett is coming. So everybody started to be busy and work. And there, when he used to come in with those two dogs, there where we could have a glimpse at him. But it was so terrifying that we were absolutely, frightened to death, even to look at him.
What did you know about Schindler's factory and his
Jews? We heard that there is a factory outside the ghetto that some people were chosen, but we didn't even know when and how it happened. Then we found out that it was only if you know somebody, knew somebody influential, or had money or jewelry or whatever, that people took it a risk to still keep. That was the only chance to get into Schindler's camp.
Did you and your sister try to maintain your religious life in some way in Plaszów?
No, that was impossible.
What kind of food rations did you have there?
In the morning we had supposed to be coffee, which was black water, tasteless, and then a lunchtime, some grey water, supposed to be soup, and if you were lucky, sometimes you found a bit of potato.